Good morning and happy Friday. I'm Cheryl Walker with part two of the News Gazette. Today is Friday, July 26th, and we will continue with hush money conviction. NYC DA Justice's ruling has no bearing. New York prosecutors are urging a judge to uphold Donald Trump's historic hush money conviction, arguing in court papers made public Thursday that the verdict should stand despite the Supreme Court's recent ruling on the presidential immunity. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office said in a court filing that the High Court's opinion has no bearing on the hush money case because it involves unofficial acts from which the former president is not immune. This case involved evidence of defendants' personal conduct, not as official acts, prosecutors wrote in a 66-page filing. They contend there is no basis for disturbing the jury's verdict. The Republican presidential nominee is trying to get the verdict and even the indictment tossed out because of the Supreme Court's July 1st decision. The ruling curbs prosecution of ex-presidents for official acts and restricts prosecutors from pointing to official acts as evidence that the commander-in-chief's unofficial acts were illegal. Trump lawyers have argued that the prosecutors rushed the trial instead of waiting on for the Supreme Court's presidential immunity decision, and that the trial was tainted by evidence that should not have been allowed under the High Court's ruling, such as testimony from some Trump White House staffers and tweets he sent while he was president. Prosecutors countered that the Supreme Court ruling doesn't apply to the evidence in question, and that regardless, it's only a sliver of the mountains of testimony and documentary proof that the jury considered before reaching its verdict May 30th. In a letter Thursday to trial judge Juan N. Merchan, Trump's lawyer Todd Blanche said the prosecution filing contained several legal and factual misrepresentations and asked for permission to file a 30-page response next week. The Supreme Court ruled about a month after the jury found Trump guilty of falsifying business records to a concealed deal to pay off porn actor Stormy Daniels shortly before the 2016 election. At the time, she was considering going public with the story of a sexual encounter with Trump a decade earlier. Trump was a private citizen campaigning for president, but neither elected nor sworn in when Cohen paid Daniels. But Trump was president when Cohen was reimbursed, and Cohen testified that they discussed the repayment arrangement in the Oval Office. Election 2024, presidential campaigns back on the attack. Harris, Trump take fresh aim at each other as presidential race moves into post-Biden phase. By Kevin Rector, Los Angeles Times, TNS. Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Trump entered into a new phase of the presidential race on the morning after an Oval Office speech in which President Biden bowed out, each taking new aim at the other as they sprint toward November. During a Thursday morning conversation on the Republicans-friendly Fox and Friends, Trump called Harris a worse candidate than Biden and a San Francisco radical who would take the country to a new low if elected. "She's the most radical person probably we've had in office," Trump said, "let alone the office of presidency." Harris, in a speech before the American Federation of Teachers in Houston, cast the choice before voters as one between moving backward or forward, and Trump's agenda as a dangerous one, including for unionized workers like those before her. "We are fighting for the future," she said. "In our vision of the future, we see a place where every person has the opportunity not just to get by, but to get ahead." Harris also released her first campaign ad, which featured a similarly forward-looking tone, and got a boost from Beyonce, who gave permission to the Harris campaign to use her song Freedom, according to CNN. The two candidates remarked Thursday, expanded on themes they have been striking in recent days as Harris made quick work of shoring up support to officially become the Democrats' candidate for president. The latest New York Times Scene College poll released Thursday showed Harris in a virtual tie with Trump, with 70% of the Democratic voters saying they wanted the party to quickly consolidate behind her and avoid a fight for the nomination. But Harris and Trump also aimed to punch back at new lines of attack from the opposing camp, as well as old ones resurfacing from the past. Across the country, surrogates and supporters for each candidate tried to do the same. In one resurfaced video, Trump's running mate, Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio, called Harris and other Democratic leaders childless cat ladies who don't really have a direct stake in the future of the country because they don't have children. Women across the internet responded angrily. Kirsten Imhoff, the ex-wife of Harris' husband, Doug Imhoff, defended Harris, as well pointing out that Harris has been a co-parent to her and the second gentleman's two children. These are the baseless tacks. For over 10 years, since Cole and Ella were teenagers, Kamala has been a co-parent with Doug and I, Kirsten Imhoff said. She is loving, nurturing, fiercely protective, and always present. I love her blended family, and I am grateful to have her in it. The tone Thursday was one more commonly felt in much earlier days of a presidential contest, but such is the impact of the semantic shift in the race caused by Biden's late exit. Trump and his campaign were recalibrating their message to a better and more specifically take shots at Harris. Harris and her campaign were seeing a flood of fresh enthusiasm and trying to take advantage of it. Both campaigns were trailing new ideals to see what might best stick, what would resonate with their bases, what would draw rally cheers and social media likes and engagement. On Fox and Friends, Trump ridiculed Biden's Wednesday evening speech as terrible and said Biden looked like he was having some problems. Though some Republican leaders have said the 81-year-old Biden should resign because he's unable to fulfill his duties, Trump said he didn't believe Biden should be removed from office as there is not long to go before the election. And because if he goes, she then takes over and she's worse than he is. In recent days, Harris and her backers have touted her experience as a former prosecutor, a former San Francisco district attorney, and a California attorney general. Trump on Thursday suggested without evidence that Harris somehow had her hand in various criminal cases against him. They weaponized the justice system against me, Trump said. They push all these cases on me, and then they're the ones that started. And then they say I'm a prosecutor. He's a criminal. They're the ones, every case is started by them. Trump has been charged with multiple crimes for allegedly taking classified documents with him home after leaving the White House and then trying to cover it up and encouraging his supporters to attack the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. These cases were spearheaded by special counsel separately. He was criminally convicted of 34 felonies in a case brought by a New York prosecutor for falsifying business records to hide paying hush money to a porn actress allegedly she had an affair with him, which he has denied. He faces separate charges of trying to subvert the election in Georgia, which were filed by a prosecutor there. Harris, in contrast, began her speech before the teachers' union by praising Biden's speech and his work for the country, saying, "I revere this office, but I love my country more," Biden said, and he was passing the torch to another generation of leaders to defeat Trump. "He showed once again what true leadership looks like," he said. "He really did. His words were poignant. I apologize." She also tried to hit on major policy goals and she would take up continue from the current administration, such as affordable health care, forgiving student loans, passing gun control measures, and backing unionized labor. "We are in a fight for our most fundamental freedoms," Harris said. "And to this room of leaders, I say, bring it on." Both candidates also commented on protesters who on Wednesday set ablaze the American flags, the Union Station in Washington, in protest of a speech before Congress by Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, whose country is conducting a brutal war against Hamas that has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians and leveled much of Gaza. Again, their message diverged. In a statement, Harris described despicable acts of by unpatriotic protesters and dangerous hate-fueled rhetoric and condemned the burning of the flag. "That flag is a symbol of our highest ideals as a nation and represents the promise of America. It should never be desecrated in that way. Harris, I support the right to peacefully protest, but let's be clear, anti-Semitism, hate and violence of any kind have no place in our nation." Trump said anyone who does anything to desecrate an American flag should be thrown in jail for a year. Now people will say, "Oh, it's unconstitutional. Those are stupid people," he said. He suggested that such issues the U.S. could learn from strongman leaders in other countries all over the world, Putin and President Xi of China, all over the world. They're watching the Kim Jong-un who looks at us. "There are a bunch of babies," Trump said, "that would happen in their country. It is impossible for that to happen in their country." OSHA's finding plan over lead safety failures. Danville Viscofan USA and Company is facing $197,000 in fines for multiple safety violations in the wake of an incident earlier this year in which two workers at its Danville plant were seriously injured. The violations at the facility, which makes casing for meat products, were reported by the Federal Occupational Health and Safety Administration in Peoria. OSHA inspectors initially responded to report that a maintenance worker employed by the Viscofan was hospitalized with broken bones and lacerations after their arm was caught in a roller machine January 25th during the investigation. Officials learned another employee had suffered chemical burns while cleaning a pump February 1st. On or about January 25th, an employee on Fibrous Line 9 was exposed to an ingoing knit point from the rotating roller while conducting a service task, the citation said. The employee was setting up rags up on the rollers, and the employer did not ensure the lockout procedure was utilized. In another incident on about February 1st, an employee conducting maintenance and servicing a pump was exposed to contact with hazardous sodium hydroxide. The employee was in the process of draining the pump, and the employer did not ensure the lockout procedure was utilized, OSHA report said. The U.S. Department of Labor, which OSHA is a part, chastised the company in a press release. The U.S. subsidiary of the world's leading maker of meat casings with a history of dozens of serious violations since 2015 could have prevented employees at its Danville facility from suffering severe injuries twice in the same week in January of 2024 by following the plant's procedures. Federal required procedures for machine safety, the release said, in both incidents. The agency determined the company lacked adequate procedures for energy control and failed to have them in place. Before the workers began their task, the release at OSHA also found Visco failed to train its workers on machine safety procedures, also known as lockout, tagout, and on its use of hazardous chemicals, and cited the company for not reviewing energy control procedures annually. Visco Fan USA has a long history of violations and worker injuries at its Danville facility, with two more workers needed less suffering severe injuries because the company again failed to implement an effective safety and health program and develop specific energy control procedures to protect workers during maintenance. OSHA Area Director Edward Marshall said employers are responsible for training their workers and taking all necessary precautions to protect them from known hazards. In total, OSHA cited Visco Fan for one repeat violation, seven serious violations, and one another serious violation, and proposed $197,054 in penalties. The company had 15 business days and penalties to comply, requesting a formal conference with OSHA Area Director or contest the findings before the Independent Occupational Safety and Health Review Commission. Danville serves as U.S. headquarters Visco Fan, with a global parent founded in 1975, based in Spain. Since 1990, Visco Fan USA has operated in North America with about 700 employee facilities in Danville, Montgomery, Alabama, and Bridgewater, New Jersey. The Danville Visco plant has been punished for another violation in the past. The obituaries. Rita Dalton, Broadlands. Rita Elaine Dalton, 73, of Broadlands, passed away at 217 Saturday, July 20, 24, at Tuscola Healthcare Center. She was preceded in death by her parents, and she was retired in 2007. The family will hold a celebration of life service at a later date. Memorial contributions to be made to Jennifer Sanchez. Condolences may be made at the Reiner Wyckoff Chapel. Betty Ellis of Clinton. Betty J. Ellis, 93, of Clinton, died at 7:45 Thursday, July 25th, 2024, at Carl Bromine Medical Center in Normal. The family entrusted Calvert Funeral Home Clinton with the cremation rites. James Millsap of Villa Grove was 84. He passed away peacefully at his home Wednesday, July 24. I apologize. And before his passing, February 2024, he is survived by two children. Mr. Millsap's funeral arrangements will be at the Villa Grove Cemetery. He'll be officiated by Dwayne Percy. Visitation will begin 1 to 2 p.m. Monday, July 29th at Jones Funeral Home, Villa Grove, with the funeral service beginning at 2 p.m. Jo Ellen White, she was born on June 17, 1934, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, July 24, 2024. Please join Jo Ellen's family in sharing memories and photos on her tribute wall at Sunset Funeral Home. Commentary. CrowdStrike outage shows danger of relying on big tech overlords. Starting Thursday with ripple effects for days afterward, a routine software update caused a record-breaking freeze across much of the world. CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity vendor deployed by Microsoft Systems, installed an update that analysts said probably skipped quality testing. The result disabled an estimated 8.5 million computers and perhaps the largest cyber event in history. The shutdown brought America's collective cyber vulnerability into a sharp focus. Our reliance on trillion-dollar tech overlords may imperil national security. The tech providers that support the infrastructure relied upon the public and private sectors bear a responsibility to protect our safety and security. In 2023, Federal Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency Director Jen Easterly proposed holding tech companies liable for selling vulnerable products with such measures in place. CrowdStrike's outage might have been avoided. The rapid consolidation of power in tech companies pose challenges to the government and society. Companies reaching unprecedented valuations and the trillions control digital infrastructure that people depend on at least as much as the mail and trash pickup. Tech companies now run or help communication, commerce, and other several more nimble than federal agencies, but also do it with less regulation and public oversight, as well as profit motive. The tech sector market dominance accounts for more than 10% of the U.S. economy. In 2024, Microsoft reported revenues of $211.91 billion. Other Belmonts posted even larger figures. Amazon, $574.78 billion. Apple, $383.28 billion. And Alpha Google, $307.39 billion. A chunk of these profits goes toward lobbying, paying penalties for safety and antitrust violations, rather than investing in cybersecurity and other improvements. In 2023, tech giants spent at least $10 million each on lobbying, while also receiving more than $3 billion in fines and settlements for breaking European antitrust laws and facing lawsuits by Department of Justice and Federal Trade Commission. Meanwhile, in 2022, the financial impact of power software in the U.S. amounted to $2.41 trillion, according to the Consortium on Information and Software Quality. Software costs outages can be avoided in a few ways. Diversity tech contractors' options, strengthening resilience and mitigates risk. By contrast, if everyone relies on just a couple of providers, a single breakdown carries huge consequences. CrowdStrike, one of the nation's largest cybersecurity firms, exemplifies this. Equally important is redundancy, multiple layers of security measures and backups that ensure continuous protection and functionality. Although creating these may cost companies more in the beginning, they are investments in maintaining trust between business and their customers. As Java Abid, a cybersecurity expert and assistant professor in business at Johns Hopkins University, told USA Today, around two-thirds of software vulnerabilities reported in commonly used programming language stem from memory-related security flaws, such as the misallocation allocation of freeing up of memory space that can enable unauthorized access or the execution of malicious code. Earlier this year, the White House, notably given how often the government lags on tech issues, urged widespread adoption of memory-safe programming languages such as Rust, Go, Python, and Java, which protect against certain kinds of bugs related to how memory is used. Yet, Microsoft and other big tech companies continue to rely on C, C++, alongside other languages because those are fast and used in developing firmware. Programs memory to help device operate. It's worth sacrificing some convenience to avoid devastating security lapse. Finally, in line with recommendations to increase liability for tech companies, U.S. regulations need an update. Our antitrust laws should move away from focusing solely on pricing and avoiding economic harm to encompass data privacy protection and security. We can also look to European Union, where regulators are prioritizing cyber resilience through the Digital Operational Resilience Act, effective in 2025, meant to establish strict requirements to make sure the official sector can handle threats only by holding technology providers to the highest standards. Can we continue to enjoy the advance of an interconnected world without fear of avoidable and possible life-threatening disruptions? Two legends to be honored with Jim dedication. This story is written by Dave Hinton at NewsGazette.com. Rantoul, Harold Hale, Hal Summers, and Marquette Carter both had a way of inspiring young people. Maybe it was because they knew they cared about them. The contributions of the influential coaches, educators will be celebrated in the 10 a.m. ceremony Sunday with the main gymnasium at Rantoul's J.W. Eater Junior High School, where they spent so many hours, is named for them. State Representative Brandon Schweizer, Republican Danville, will present certificates to each of the families. An open house will follow. Summers was a longtime physical education teacher at the junior high school and coached basketball, baseball, and track. In 25 years heading to the school's basketball program, Summers teams amassed a record of 707-198 advances to the state tournaments 19 times and earned 4 state titles, 3 second-place finishes, and 1 third and 1 fourth. He excelled as a baseball coach as well as the Eagles won state titles in 1963 and 1970 and placed in the top 4 several times. Rantoul City School Superintendent Scott Wood says Summers is the winningest coach in Rantoul's history and in the state halls of fame as a coach and a player. School Board President John Bertherton played under Summers and was a strong backer of naming the gymnasium after him and Carter. Bertherton called Summers the greatest influence in my life after his parents. He was a fantastic coach. Even a better person, Bertherton said. He was an inspiration to many people. He just understood how to get people to do things the right way. Great leader. Bertherton and Summers knew how to adapt. Often had to do with so many of his athletes being children of Air Force parents who would transfer in and out. 1 year had 5 different starting lineups in basketball. Granted, we had a lot of talent, but you wanted to play for Coach Summers, he said. Bertherton and Summers were influential in convincing him to go into teaching and helping to get a job at Rantoul, where he taught social studies and language arts. A standout player at Lawrenceville, where he was ranked among the state's elite players in women's class system and held the school scoring record for many years. Summers accepted an athletic scholarship to play both basketball and baseball at Indiana University. He played for legendary Hoosiers coach Brandon McCracken. His collegiate career ended cut short when he joined the military to serve the Korean War. After returning home, he finished his education on the GI Bill before beginning a teaching career. After 3 years coaching at St. Francisville, he became the Rantoul. Summers retired in 82 at the age of 52. Died June 30th of that year, his 30th wedding anniversary. Bertherton, he had been ill. The 2001 Village Street West of School at Harold Summers Drive. Carter had been a magnet for young people and those all ages. Students might not be also appreciated what he told them as a teacher or administrator, but they knew he cared about them. That much is evident as 2006 Tyree continues to tutor children. Woods said Carter has a lot of intuition, knowledge, and a lot of knowledge of the community. In 2023, Carter and her husband, late Eddie, were inspiration for the establishment of the Carter Education and Community Foundation. The foundation was founded by her daughter, Tanya, and some of Marguerite Carter's former students. Tanya Carter is a parent family liaison for Rantoul City Schools. Marguerite Carter's involvement in the community hasn't been confined to education. She's a former Rantoul Village Board Trustee, one of the first Black women on the panel. She's fun to talk to. She has a lot of wisdom. Carter earned a bachelor's degree from Texas College. She was hired in Rantoul as an 8th grade teacher in 73-74 school year. She also coached volleyball, track, and girls basketball and worked with the National Junior Honor Society Council. Carter was named assistant principal at Easter beginning in 1997-98 school year. Bertherton called Carter an outstanding coach, outstanding person. Look at the things she's done, he said. She deserves to be recognized, and the kids like her. The kids want to talk to her. Maria McCarthy, a retired teacher at Eater, and Carter as a coach. She was amazing, McCarthy said. I'm sure you've heard it before. She wasn't just a coach. The woman knew how to communicate with kids. She cared about them and wanted them to do well. McCarthy said playing volleyball for Carter was kind of like an extra. She would teach players how different positions in volleyball had different responsibilities and that they carried over to life in general. She would teach us, this is how you talk with people. This is how you interact with people, trying to show us how to connect with people and be respectful to people and learn teamwork, McCarthy said. Eater finished second in volleyball in the state during McCarthy's 8th grade year and also finished second in the 1990s when McCarthy joined Carter as a coach. Carter also taught physical education and science, mentored new students, coached the school's first school girls softball team. She has served as a Salvation Army kettle convincer, scheduling people to be ringers at Rantoul's Walmart and County Market, and was named the organization's top volunteer. She's a once-in-a-lifetime person, McCarthy. She deserves all of this. It's just awesome to see the love and support she's getting. And fast, she continues to give back to the community she loves. Skateland rink reopens after brief closure due to water main break. Skateland Savoy Thursday afternoon after closing early Wednesday night due to a loss of water pressure as utility workers repaired a broken main nearby. Illinois American Water list of active alerts shows that there have been several bull orders issued in Champaign, Urbana over the past couple of days due to a broken valve and main breaks. Skateland co-owner Bob Householder said the utilities has not shared the cause of the main break and affected them. He does not believe it was related to Wednesday's afternoon storm. In my opinion, it's probably more because of the extreme heat we've had with the moving of the ground and everything, he said. And it's probably just a joint or something or a connection and it failed. In response to a query from the News Gazette about the cause of local alerts and the status of the repairs, Illinois American Water spokesman Anna Kubas said all repairs are complete on the main break near Skateland. Restoration work is underway. She said at 2:30 p.m. Thursday, impacted customers remain on a bull order. During the bull order, customers should bring their water to a rolling boil for 5 minutes before using water for drinking or cooking. Water is okay for bathing, washing, and other common uses. When the bull order is lifted, customers will be notified after tests confirming water meets all regulated quality standards. Illinois American Water is issued a bull notice at 1:52 p.m. Wednesday that covered the Goodwill building at the part of the Savoy Plaza and part of the Prospect Point Apartments complex. Another alert sent out at 3:50 included the area as well as Skateland and the rest of the apartment complex. Both alerts listed on the main break as a cause and estimated ended on 5 p.m. today. While Skateland has regained water pressure, Householder said that they were still boiling water as of Thursday morning. He had turned off the water fountains for the time being. He added that the soda fountain would likely be out of use as well. Householder first became aware that something was amiss when he arrived at the rink a little after noon Wednesday at time. He saw 11 Illinois American Water trucks parked on Curtis Road between Skateland and Goodwill. When he left the rink about 3:30 to run an errand, he saw a couple of trucks and an excavator. One of our employees lives across the street in the apartment and said they got a boil order notice because of their water being affected, Householder said. When initially checked the utilities website, he saw the alert started at the Savoy Plaza Shopping Center and continued south to the apartments, but did not include Skateland. After returning from his errand about 6:10, Householder found that the rink had no water pressure. They had shut the water off, he said. I guess it was 12-inch water main that broke and they shut the water off coming this way as they could fix it. This was the Skateland could not open for business due to health department regulations. Our recent boil order in Champaign-Urbana included a notice sent out at 12:22 on Tuesday and customers in residential area. Pier Court and East Pennsylvania Avenue and Urbana do main repairs. Estimated was 5 p.m. Thursday. A notice sent out at 6:52 Wednesday. Customers residential area South Cottage Grove Avenue and East Pennsylvania and Urbana due to a broken valve. Placement estimated in was 5 p.m. today. A notice sent out to 9:11 a.m. Wednesday to customers residential area Springfield Avenue and South Russell Street and South James Street in Champaign due to a valve replacement estimate in was 5 p.m. today. A notice sent out on 10:09 a.m. Thursday to customers in residential area along West Main Street east of John Jones Park and Savoy due to a main break repairs estimated in was 5 p.m. Saturday. More information about active alerts is available at illaw/alerts. This is Cheryl Walker with part two of the News Gazette concluding. Thank you for joining me, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Have a great day.